I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Monday afternoon, July 28th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart, back after a week and a half of vacation. Glad to be back in the Business Hour chair. The coming days will include fresh data on home sales, consumer spending, plus the government jobs report for July. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, so much for the talk of a possible superhero fatigue heading into the summer. That's because another comic book inspired movie has soared to the top of the box office for the second time this month. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore, based in Los Angeles. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And when it comes to the Fantastic Four, Paul, the headlines write themselves, especially after a great weekend at the box office.
No question about it, Rob. And it's clobbering time, as they say in the movie, for the box office for Fantastic Four. $118 million domestic weekend debut, $100 million internationally for $218 million this weekend alone. Like you said, superhero fatigue. What superhero fatigue? We have at number two, Superman, which crossed the half a billion mark after its third weekend of release in theaters worldwide. I mean, those are huge numbers. I think people love superhero movies if they're good. If they're not, you know, I'd say it's bad movie fatigue, not superhero fatigue.
Now, when we talk about a comic book property having an amazing debut weekend at the box office, especially as the movie theater business still tries to recover from the COVID shutdowns, you know, how long of a trail do these movies have? Because a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Superman racking up hundreds of millions of dollars, and now it's getting 12 to 13 million, and chances are you're going to see it on a streaming service before too long. And way back when, Paul, we're talking 20 years ago or more, if a movie was a hit, it was in the theater all summer long. And in some cases, if it was a real big title, it was in the cheap theaters for a year. And that doesn't exist anymore.
Wow, you're taking me back, Rob, because I remember those days too. I know back when Home Alone came out, I think that movie was in a theater from one Christmas to the next. I mean, it's just pretty incredible. No, it's different now, but I think, you know, there is a bit of a dynamic window, meaning that from the time a movie is released in theaters to when it hits streaming, that can be dynamic, meaning if a film is still generating big box office in weekend 3, 4, 5, better to leave it in theaters. It gives it that more covetability, if you will. People will want that movie even more, and because the prestige that's given to a film by being in theaters, especially one that earns like half a billion dollars. There's really nothing quite like that to add that halo effect to these movies. And beyond that, I mean, what this means for DC and Marvel, the importance of both of these movies, really, I mean, look at this. You have Superman that opened on July 11, and then Fantastic Four opening on July 25. You would look at that and say, that's too close. You can't have two superhero movies that close together. But guess what? It totally worked, and Superman held in there this weekend, and Jurassic World is still out there doing well. Formula One, F1, the movie is doing great. That's over half a billion dollars worldwide. Jurassic is over $718 million worldwide. These are big numbers. This is a blockbuster summer for sure.
And then very quickly, Paul, as old man Rob continues to ask old man questions, we were talking about the movies staying in the cheap theaters for a year. I remember Jurassic Park. That the original one was in the cheap theater until the summer of 94. I mean, that's how big of a movie that was. But back in the day, it was Siskel and Ebert. They had the power to make or break a movie. Today, it's Rotten Tomatoes. So are these Marvel movies and the DC movies, are they passing the Rotten Tomatoes test?
They actually are. And actually, you know, it's interesting, though. Jurassic World got more mixed reviews, Jurassic World Rebirth, yet it's at $700 million. I think people just want that popcorn movie experience. But I feel like the better the reviews and then the positive response from audiences, that combo is really important for a movie's longevity, both on the big screen and then on the small screen. And then, remember, we have more movies yet to come from both DC and Marvel. And if both of these movies had bombed, you would see Marvel and DC scrambling right now, as would their parent companies, would just be, you know, Disney for Marvel and Warner Brothers for DC. They'd be scrambling to figure out, what are we going to do? I mean, if you were to take superhero movies out of the box office equation, that'd be bad for movie theaters, that's for sure, but also for studios and their parent companies who are banking on these films as an annuity that keeps on giving for decades to come.
Paul DeGarabedian, thank you for joining us.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The busy week on Wall Street is kicked off with word of a highly anticipated trade deal between the U.S. and the European Union, and it will be capped by the big government jobs report on Friday. Joining us with a preview is Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. A lot of activity on the trade front this weekend. So can you run down some of the highlights, starting with this agreement with the European Union, or framework of an agreement with the European Union?
Yeah, it's an important deal, Rob. Going forward, the European exports will be hit with a 15% U.S. tariff. That's instead of the 30% that President Trump was threatening just a few days ago if they didn't come to a deal. In addition, the president will be very happy that the U.S. was able to negotiate that the Europeans were going to buy $750 billion worth of U.S. energy over the coming 2 to 3 years. And then they're going to be making an additional $600 billion in investments here in the United States. Again, the president's goal is to try to even out the trade balance and make those companies over there do more investing and production in this country. So we'll have to see how that works out. Short term, markets are taking this as a positive for the EU, excuse me, for the U.S., positive for the U.S. But over the longer term, it remains to be seen how much production actually will make it over to the U.S. So we'll have to hold off on that. But markets are definitely responding positively this morning.
And this is Jobs Week. We will have the private payroll report on Wednesday and then the government jobs report on Friday morning. A number of people watching this, including Fed policymakers.
Yeah, that's right. The Fed has its policy meeting this week on Wednesday. At 1 o'clock Central Time on Wednesday, we should have a news announcement about a rate cut or not a rate cut. In this particular case, we think the Fed will not cut rates this time, but they'll probably wait until later in the year. We need to see how bad that bump to inflation is going to be once all of the goods that we start importing have tariffs tied to them. Right now, we're still, you go to the store, you're going to be buying goods that were brought in earlier in the year before tariffs were put into place. But those inventories are going to run out. They're going to have to be restocked with more expensive goods. That's going to pop inflation. It's going to slow the economy a little bit, and the Fed wants to see how much of each of those impacts we're going to get.
And when it comes to whether or not the Fed will cut interest rates, Paul, you and I have seen this dance an awful lot, and that is if the Fed wants to raise or cut rates at their meeting, chances are by now it's in the Wall Street Journal that they're going in one direction or the other. The Fed hates a lot of things and surprises at the top of their list.
There are times when they want to surprise us, but that's usually when the markets are either running too far ahead or running too far behind. And that's not the case yet right now. So, yeah, They don't want surprises right now. The market has gotten the message. The rate cut has been taken out of expectations and left for later this year. We think that's a more realistic approach for the markets here.
And then talk about market movers. I mean, this really is a heavyweight kind of week. We have tariffs. We have the jobs report coming out. We have a Fed policy meeting. And then we have the PCE, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. Of all of these, you know, in a vacuum, each report has the tendency to move markets. What will carry the greatest weight this week?
The Fed will probably carry the greatest weight this week, and it's not because of them not cutting rates, which is already priced in. It will be whatever signals they give about the future. So everyone will be waiting to hear how they describe their current outlook, and then the press a conference that comes afterward where Chairman Powell will discuss what they're seeing going forward. That will give some important clues about September. That's when there is an expectation for a rate cut. So that'll be important. The employment report on Friday. So Fed is Wednesday. Employment report is on Friday. PCE, personal consumption expenditures, that price index coming out on Thursday, expecting 2.7% increase there. It's been a slow time for inflation, but again, we're still spending on those inventories that were bought pre-tariff, so expect those numbers to move up later this fall.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Coming up next, a scam called quishing involves the use of phony QR codes by cyber crooks. We'll tell you how to avoid it next.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
QR code scams are surging, tricking millions of people into visiting fake sites, turning once convenient tech into a powerful tool for cyber criminals. We welcome Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force in Chicago. Jerry, thank you for joining us today. Every day when I walk down Randolph to the radio station from the train station, I see pasted to numerous utility poles in downtown Chicago mysterious stickers with mysterious QR codes. Are you saying I shouldn't scan them?
That's exactly what we're saying. Yeah, you don't scan those, or scan the ones that you get in emails from, you know, potential vendors. These QR codes have really become more prevalent since COVID, and everybody had to use them because you weren't supposed to touch paper menus or you know, different things. So they became very prevalent, and hackers now are using them more frequently than they ever have, to the point where over a quarter of all malicious hacking sites and links that are being distributed with QR codes.
Now, it seems like a lot of cyber scams, it operates on fear. I have a missed toll. I have a large utility balance I need to pay. The U.S. Postal Service needs $700 to release a package, that kind of stuff. And that maybe the mysterious QR code on the light pole in downtown Chicago, that's an obvious red flag. But if you receive something that says you have a utility bill that's past due, scan the QR code to pay it now, that sense of urgency overrides your sense of judgment.
Absolutely. Or just get 20% off your next purchase. Scan here. Get a savings on this. They're using not only fear now, but greed and you know, what do we like to do and how do we want to do it? If you want to go see a new band in the area, here's their website. Click on this link and boom, they got you.
Is this a situation where you can say, you know, a good rule of thumb is to just stick to trusted sources and things that you know, as opposed to just scanning on any old QR code that is sent your way? Or have the scanner, or have hackers found a way to take advantage of things that you know?
Well, it's like any other phishing scam. So they can send you an email. They can put out a document that looks like it's coming from your bank or from your, you know, used vendor that you've used in the past. And it's not necessarily them. So just as we say in a phishing scam, instead of clicking on an email, on a link in an email, instead of clicking on a QR code on a website or on a post or something like that, go to the website, go to www.mycompany.com. do that. It's going to take you more time and effort, but it's a lot safer. But the other problem is if you receive something, right, and you drop it, a perfect example are boarding passes. People drop their boarding passes, and now somebody can pick that up. That boarding pass has a code on the bottom that scanners can use to grab your personally identifiable information, and now they can send you an email with a QR code that says, hey, click here. You know, we want to give you some information about your flight. And now they can steal your credit card that's associated with your website. They can steal all your information. It's really becoming very scary.
Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, thank you for joining us.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour continues. The markets are mixed today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director of Clearstead Advisors in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And this is shaping up to be a very busy week on the data front. And it begins with a new trade deal with the European Union that, depending on your perspective, reduces uncertainty or increases prices over the status quo that exists at the beginning of the year?
Well, the markets, I think, are telling us that we're going to settle in at about 15% tariffs worldwide, maybe a little bit higher when you add the special tariffs. But the markets seem to be saying that we can handle that, that companies will absorb some of the costs, that the exporters will absorb some of the costs, that will nudge up prices somewhat, but that in the mix, it won't derail the economy, and that the increase in inflation will be tolerable and probably one time. So the markets are encouraged by these trade deals so far, but don't forget, we have China to go, we have Canada to go, we have India to go, we have Mexico to go, so it's a work in progress.
And once again, does the fine print matter necessarily in some of these trade deals, or is it just merely the presence of a trade deal that reduces some of that uncertainty and allows people to have some more concrete future plans?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, that once you know what the framework is, businesses can plan, they can plan their capital spending, they can plan their supply chains, and the fine print will take months to develop. So the answer is, once they know broadly the rules of the game, they can conduct themselves, reduce uncertainty, and we're certainly a lot better off than we were on April 2nd. It could have been a lot worse.
And then on the uncertainty front, let's shift to interest rates and what the Fed, which is, you know, they're under a great deal of pressure now to cut rates from the White House, but they have their meeting this week. They also have their preferred inflation gauge. The PCE number comes out this week, and it's a jobs week. So that's a lot of things for Jay Powell to juggle as they make a decision about cutting interest rates or just sitting on their hands.
Yeah, so you're going to get data on the strength of the job market, whether it continues to be reasonably strong. You're going to get, as you said, the PCE. You're going to get the ECI, which is the Employment Cost Index. So on both the Fed's mandates, which is employment and prices, they're going to be getting new data. I think it's almost impossible for them to lower rates politically. At this point, they would be surrendering their independence. But if you look at the hard hat meeting between Powell and Trump, it ended up on a little bit of a more friendly note. And I suspect that Powell is going to accompany the no change with a little bit of a dovish statement that will satisfy Trump and satisfy the two members of the board who are in favor of a rate cut in July.
Now, I am not an experienced Fed watcher compared to some of our guests, but if the Fed were to cut, that would have been telegraphed already. The Wall Street Journal would have tipped that story a couple of days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be a shocker if they did that. And if they did that, I think you'd see long-term interest rates go up and offset the benefit of lower short-term rates, because it would be extremely damaging to the Fed's credibility and independence. It would be bad for the dollar. I think it's not a good thing if that happens. And I think probably, you know, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, he's a smart guy. He understands Wall Street, and he's probably prepped Trump for this.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, avoiding financial chaos in the wake of the sudden death of a spouse or partner.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The unexpected death of a spouse or partner can upend everything, and couples of all ages should plan now to protect their finances, account access, and shared financial obligations. Joining us with some advice is Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And the sudden loss of a spouse is indescribably awful. And at your worst moment, you have to try to find the levers of your family's financial machinery, especially if that dearly departed spouse was also the one who handled the finances.
Absolutely. And it's huge for what I like to call wealth leaks, money that you may lose unknowingly and very unnecessarily. And you know, Rob, it doesn't matter whether you are newly married or have been married, kind of throw up some air quotes, forever, this is a very important area to get right. So could we start with the newlyweds, please?
Let's begin with the newlyweds, shall we?
First of all, if you are newlywed, I want you to figure out what, if anything, is in the way of trusting each other and fix it. We help many newlyweds with this issue because money issues can tear a relationship apart very fast. So don't let that be you. And with the quote-unquote married forever folks, we see too many couples assume that this was handled years ago, and it's a big, huge mistake. Imagine. Now, this may sound crazy, but this happens too often. You named your ex-spouse as a beneficiary. You completely forgot to change it. So what ends up happening, you disinherit your current spouse and possibly even your own children. So work, please, with a fiduciary who's willing to be a nudge to make sure everything is correct.
Now, this, in terms of imagining what the death of a partner would look like, it's almost a mindset thing, Chris, where you assume that if a partner dies, it is after a protracted illness in which you have a very long time to get all of those ducks in a row because you're thinking about that. But you don't factor in the sudden loss of a spouse, and that's where the problems begin. Now, without getting too morbid, should you have a simulation or should you just sit down with a fiduciary financial planner and making sure you run through everything if the unthinkable were to occur?
Yeah, you have to do it all. I mean, really, you should start with the accounts and the titling. Is it even titled correctly? Should this be an individual account, joint? And if it is an individual account, have you at least a name where it transfers or passes on your death? And what about debt? How's that structured? Are these your credit cards, our credit cards, the mortgages, the lines of credit? Do you have a trust? Is it funded? Is it funded properly? Is it currently aligned with what you want now? Do you know how many clients we have seen enter our practice with a trust that is not funded? They spend good money for the trust, but it simply can't act on their behalf according to their wishes. So this year, it's interesting that I'm on this conversation, because this year we've had people die suddenly and as well die with what you might call long enough knowledge to know how to get everything right, but it just didn't get all the way through the finish line. So I'll tell you, knowing that all of your beneficiary arrangements are correct is extremely important. So I touched on an example before, like maybe an ex-spouse inheriting, but divide it in your brain this way. If you're still working, maybe you think that your employer 401k, TSP, deferred comp, you know, employee stock purchase plan, RSUs, look at all that stuff and see who your beneficiaries are. Make sure you're also putting contingent beneficiaries. Or maybe you're not employed anymore, but you have some personal life insurance, or maybe you are and you have personal life insurance or bank accounts, brokerage accounts, or IRAs, check those beneficiaries, please. It only takes a minute.
Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president, Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park. Thank you for joining us today.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. Two selections today, and Matt, in the interest of full disclosure, was your first selection inspired by seeing Happy Gilmore 2 over the weekend?
Thank you. Well, as everyone knows, Netflix, of course, the most important entertainment company in the world, and it's all shifted to streaming, and it got the head start. It dominates everything. It's what we call a super company. It's riding a major trend. It's incredibly profitable. It's growing its profits and revenues, massive global economic footprint. Just had earnings up 50% from the prior period. Revenue is going to grow, forecasted, another 17% year over year in the next quarter. So stock's obviously pretty expensive. I know probably many listeners own it. We're buying it a little bit on consolidation if there's an opportunity on weakness, just to accumulate more. In terms of its absolute market capitalization, you know, $500 billion, you know, when we have $2 to $4 trillion super companies now. So it's kind of got all the elements of things that it can continue to grow in the future. But of course, with a high valuation, you might expect pullbacks, and that's an opportunity to buy.
And then your next selection comes from the energy space.
Well, here's sort of like the opposite side, which is Chevron. Second biggest major oil company behind Exxon, pays an actually much better dividend of $4.42. So remember, that dividend is qualified, has better tax treatment than income from treasuries or fixed income. So kind of opposite side from the growth companies, but they just recently completed a critical merger with Hess Corporation, which owns a major interest in the biggest oil find in the world in recent memory, which is in Africa. All the major oil companies have a piece of that. So now Chevron does. And, you know, with some of the trade stuff maybe receding, you know, with the deal with the European Union, potentially with China coming up, global oil demand a little bit better. Oil prices a little bit better. You know, Chevron, good addition to a portfolio on the defensive and income side.
Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us on this Stock Picker Monday. His selections, Netflix, NFLX, and Chevron Corporation, CVX.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.